Harris case, Mr. Banker. Apparently you appeared.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. What we're asking here is the Court find that Judge Buglio's decision to not find an ineffective assistance of counsel claim here was clearly erroneous. When you look at the judge's decision or her opinion on that issue, particularly when it came to Mr. Diamond Falk, she states on page 6 of her opinion that when she's analyzing whether or not a motion to suppress is likely to prevail, she states, in the defendant's affidavit attached to his section 2255 motion, he does not say he was driving over the speed limit at the time he was stopped. Okay. She goes on to say, in parentheses, he does make this claim in testimony that I heard in connection with this motion, but his testimony in general was not credible, and never before had he made this claim. Now, if you look at the affidavit that is part of the record, in the middle paragraph, the defendant, when he signed this affidavit, he did state that, I don't remember if at the time the officer told me the reason why he was stopped me, because I don't think I was speeding because there was another truck in front of me. And that is consistent with his testimony at the hearings that he didn't think he was speeding. I don't know if Judge Buglio read this in a different way or overlooked it, but it is in the affidavit. And
you can't speed when you're following a truck?
Well,
He says that he wasn't speeding, and he gives a reason for that. But I'm curious, at least given modern technology, suppose somebody were driving 56 miles an hour on the interstate highways around Chicago, where the posted speed limit is 55, and the police officer, and then their speed slips to 54. And the police officer is following them and pulls them over because the police officer thinks that they are, in fact, still speeding. Do the police officers have to be right 100% of the time when they pull somebody over for alleged speeding?
I don't think they have to be right.
But so here, this guy is only going 4 miles over the speed limit, according to the police. He maybe thought he was going under, but why wouldn't the police have probable cause to pull him over, even if they might... Maybe their machines have gotten out of calibration a little bit or something.
Okay. Your Honor, I'm not saying that they would not. I mean, I think there are situations in which that occurs.
So if there's probable cause to pull them over, that's it, right?
Well, I think what has to happen when the judge is making an analysis of whether the defendant is likely to prevail, I think she has to look at that, and I think some of her statements, she did consider exactly what you were saying. But my point is that when the judge, in her opinion, stated that the defendant wasn't driving, or stated in his affidavit that he wasn't driving over the speed limit, it had an effect on what she thought what his credibility was. And she analyzed it based on thinking that he didn't say that in the affidavit when she says, and never before had he made this claim. When in fact he did.
She thinks the relevant question is whether the police were lying about the speed that Mr. Perez's truck was going when they decided to pull him over. They say, we thought he was going 59, and so we had probable cause to pull him over. And she's entertaining, is there any evidence in the record that the police were actually lying about that?
Well, I'm just, in her findings, She doesn't. I don't see her saying that. I see her making
the decision. I'm looking at the same page you were, page 6 of her opinion, and she says present counsel does not provide any argument as to why Mr. Perez would have been likely to prevail in the argument that police were lying as to the speed Mr. Perez's truck was going at the time state police decided to pull him over.
Well, I think the court could consider the credibility of the defendant as an issue of whether the police are lying or not. And I think she ended up saying here that she didn't believe the defendant based on the fact that she didn't think that it was in the affidavit. And then that rested the case. She could have then looked at in the testimony of the defendant, and he did talk about the fact that when he was stopped, he wasn't told why he was stopped by the police. He wasn't ever given a ticket. He was immediately questioned about what he had in the vehicle as far as documentation, and then he was asked for consent. Now, when you're looking at a motion to suppress question, you, as a judge, you may go, well, why didn't you tell him that why he was stopped? Why didn't you end up giving him a ticket? Why'd you move into this area? Which could go to credibility of the police officer. But she, in my view, as far as what she wrote in her opinion, she didn't get there because she didn't believe the defendant was credible. And so I'm saying, that's clearly erroneous, because in the affidavit, he does say that he thought he wasn't speeding. So,
well, that doesn't mean that his lawyer was ineffectual for failing to pursue a suppression motion. It'd be very unlikely to be granted, whatever he said in his affidavit.
Well, and again, I mean, that was ultimately the decision that the court had made, that it was unlikely to be granted. What I'm saying here is, what was the basis in which she made that decision? And it seems to be...
No, the question is whether his lawyer was unreasonable to think this would have been a loser.
Okay.
What's the evidence would have been... if all he was going to testify was he was following a truck and therefore he didn't think he was speeding, that's pretty feeble. Why would a lawyer be unprofessional to fail to move to suppress?
Well, even above, I mean, beyond that, when he's stopped, all this cocaine is found, and he starts cooperating.
Right.
So,
well, that still doesn't.
The case goes on a different track then.
Absolutely.
For a lawyer, and his best deal is to let him spill the beans and testify against the other people involved. That's what he did.
That's correct. And I understand the court had reasoned when it came to the first attorney, Mickey Forbes, that the whole movement of the case was going that direction, and she basically said, because Mickey Forbes was on the case at that point when everything was moving in the direction of a cooperation and a good plea agreement, she didn't look at Mickey Forbes. But when it came to the point that the defendant withdrew his agreement to plead guilty, and he decided he was afraid to testify against the co-defendants, Mr. Diamond Falk was appointed, and within a month and a half, he does an open plea with Mr. Diamond Falk. My point is, when looking at Mr. Diamond Falk, that cooperation had ceased. It was done. The defendant said, I don't want to cooperate anymore. I'm not going to do this plea agreement. And so he was advised, obviously, by Mr. Diamond Falk to go ahead and do an open plea. Now, Mr. Diamond Falk could have looked at the case at that point and go, well, what are my other options? Let's look at a motion to suppress. The defendant, did I ask the defendant anything about whether he thought he was speeding or not? It appears from the record, and Judge Buckley-O states it, Mr. Diamond Falk made no evaluation. He didn't even consider that question. Mr. Diamond Falk apparently considered the consent question, but not the basis of the stop question. But consent wouldn't become an issue if the stop was a bad stop. And if you look in the record, the judge is asking Mr. Diamond Falk about that. So, anyway, I believe that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Banker. Mr. Fullerton?
May it please the court. The judgment of the district court should be affirmed. Judge Bucklow was correct in concluding that there was no basis for finding that either of Mr. Perez's attorneys were ineffective. With regard to the suppression motion, Judge Bucklow correctly concluded that having failed to file a suppression motion based on the traffic stop was not ineffective. There was no merit to such a motion, and it was not ineffective for Mr. Perez's attorneys to conclude that. Mr. Perez's only basis for suggesting that a suppression of the stop would have been successful was his say-so about his speed, but given that Ms. Forbes and Mr. Diamondfalk both had the police reports indicating that he had been clocked at 59 miles per hour, it was professional for him to conclude that that was not going to be a winner, I shouldn't pursue that, I should take, both attorneys should take the case in a different direction. That cannot have been ineffective to file a motion to suppress in these circumstances, and so Judge Bucklow's judgment was not clearly erroneous. If there are no other questions from the court, we just ask that you affirm the judgment below.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fullerton.
Thank you.
Mr. Banker, do you have anything further? Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
No.
You were not. But we thank you anyway, and both of you.